This is Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading episode 31 of Here's How. Right-wing economics is sometimes a dirty word in Irish politics. People can be proud to be left, but seem to make excuses for being on the right. On this podcast, someone who really wants to push conservative economics.
Here's How is Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast. Make your view heard. Just dial 076 603 5060 and tell the world what you're thinking. Your voicemail may be included in the next podcast. You can find tips on recording your contribution and other ways to contact the show at hereshow.ie/call.
If you were listening, you'll know that I was interviewing party candidates in the run-up to the election. I interviewed candidates from People Before Profit, Renew, the Social Democrats and the Green Party, and the Independence Alliance. Then it came to the four big parties, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin and Labour. I contacted all of their press offices. None of them said no, but none of them said yes either. They all promised to get back to me, but none of them did. But I didn't leave it there. I contacted other offices, party headquarters, Leinster House offices, and many individual candidates. In the case of all four parties, I sent requests to dozens of candidates from each party. I made it clear that I could record at a time to suit them, and that I could do an early morning or late night recording, and they could reach thousands of their voters. As you can hear, no luck. Now I know that they're busy canvassing, but so are the other candidates who I did interview, and smaller parties generally have far less resources. You can make of that what you will.
Never miss a show. Follow at Here's How Podcast on Twitter and like Here's How on Facebook for updates on each show's contents.
There's an earthquake creeping up on Irish politics. If you look at paddypower.com, by a wide margin, the most likely government after the election is a Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil coalition. It's not surprising, looking at Adrian Kavanagh's analysis of the polls, and I'll put a link to all of these on the website. If you look at Adrian Kavanagh's analysis of the polls, it's clear that there are only two-party combinations that are close to a majority, that is, winning 79 seats or more between them. One of those combinations is Fine Gael and Sinn Féin. I don't think we need to waste any time talking about that prospect. The only other two-party combination is Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And that only tells half the story. Not only can no other two-party combination get a majority, there's no other three-party combination, and there isn't even likely to be a four-party combination that would get a majority, other than those two. Any likely government other than a Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil coalition, would not only need to negotiate the demands and egos of many small parties and independents, it would also need to accommodate a breathtaking political spectrum, from Renew demanding huge tax cuts for the rich, to Trotskyites demanding huge tax increases for the rich. In other words, any other likely government isn't that likely at all, as we heard from Breed Smith in the last podcast. Political nerds are getting excited at this prospect. It would be a huge shift. It would give the Dáil a clear left-right split along the continental model. It could well lead to the merger of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, the end of Punch and Judy politics. And that's possible, but what I'm interested in is what happens next. First up, it would create a huge political divide between Dublin and the rest of the country. We've never had a government that drew such little support from the capital. By Kavanagh's projections, just 14 of the government's 86 TDs would come from the capital. More than two-thirds of Dublin seats would be held by the opposition. Then what? There will be local elections in 2019. With the government more than 3 years into its term, it would be sure to be suffering from midterm blues. And that would likely lead to a recovery for the Labour Party and a bonanza for Sinn Féin and the smaller parties in the capital. You can hear the slogans already. this government doesn't care about Dublin. Given the type of politicians in the government, it's likely that they couldn't resist pork barrelling their own constituencies, and this would for sure be noticed and resented in Dublin. There is already a significant political divide between Dublin and the rest of the country. Both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have declined in the capital much more than elsewhere. That trend is masked by the gene pool independents, counted as others in rural constituencies. The others in Dublin and the surrounding counties are much more ideological, with real differences of policy between them and the main parties, rather than a selection convention that went wrong. A hypothetical 2021 election could sharpen that urban-rural divide. We could be at the start of a major fracture in Irish politics.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? If you want your point of view heard, dial 076-603-5060 and leave a contribution for the show. The lines are open 24/7 and you can find tips on how to record a good contribution and other ways to contact the podcast at hereshow.ie/call.
On the line now, I have Eamon Delaney. Eamon is a former diplomat, he's a journalist, and since October, he's the director of the Hibernia Forum. What's the Hibernia Forum, Eamon?
The Hibernia Forum is an advocacy group and think tank which is dedicated to principles of the free market, prudent public spending, kind of conservative ethos. We want to balance out the debate in Ireland, which we think has been more loaded towards the left, if you like, and trade union groups and those who think that the state is really the main vehicle for solving so many of the problems in society and in Irish economy. We think we need less government, less state, and principles of enterprise and free market values, yeah.
The Iona Institute have been wildly successful at getting media attention for a relatively small number of people on the, what you might call the conservative, socially conservative issues. Are you trying to be the equivalent for fiscal conservatism?
We are, exactly. You know, you put it in a nutshell. We would love to emulate what the Iona have done. It's a different kind of dynamic, but we would believe that in the same way as the Iona believe that they have in touch with values that many people share but are not sufficiently voiced in the media or in the political culture, we believe that similarly we represent values that are common to many, many Irish people and, again, are not given full representation in the media or the political discourse.
So throw me at the top issue you think is undercovered.
I think the feeling that not enough is done to support those who are working and not drawing, who are not in some way dependent on the welfare culture. I think there's a feeling among many people in what we call the squeeze middle, who are, you know, paying a lot for childcare and working and paying a lot on what they see as taxes, that they are not, that a lot of the political noise, particularly in this election, more so actually than ever, goes to those who, you know, okay, are underprivileged and are on welfare or whatever, that not enough goes to support them. We'd also feel in that bracket with many retailers, small business people, shopkeepers, SMEs, entrepreneurs who are not sufficiently supported. We mentioned the capital gains tax rates, the VAT rates. There's a long list of things that they feel that the constituency there that's not sufficiently represented. And
I was talking to Bree Smith of People Before Profit and Milo Power of Renewa. Bree Smith said she wanted more taxes at the higher end. Milo Smith acknowledged that the Renewa's flat tax plan would give huge tax cuts to people earning six-figure salaries. Would it be fair to say you'd be closer to the latter than the former?
Yes, but the flat tax is a kind of... We supported, we mentioned that at our launch actually in October in Busfields Hotel, we actually unveiled our support for the flat tax. I have to be honest, me personally, and I have to speak personally as well as like professionally as being director of the group, would feel it's too radical a move just in terms of logistics to get your head around. I prefer a more gradualist approach. I mean, Actually, the flat tax system, when properly applied, is fair to everyone. But it is true that those who make much more money can get to keep more of it. But that is just desserts.
One calculation that was published recently was that somebody on €200,000 of gross annual salary would be better off by about €45,000 a year. That's an enormous tax cut.
Yeah, it is.
That would have to be paid for by cuts in services. What services would you cut?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wouldn't support that. You know, I mean, I want to step back from the flat tax proposal, particularly as announced by Renew. And in fact, our chairman, Cormac Lucy, wrote a Sunday Times article that was very critical of the Renew flat tax plan. So just to step back from that, I would say cut services. You see, just to change the debate or maybe present it a different way, there is no doubt that the higher paid pay a huge amount of tax. The top 5% pay a colossal amount. So this is where I differ entirely with People Before Profit, Joan Collins, and any other groups that you mentioned at the start of the question. This is a completely wrong idea that the rich get away with it. They don't. In fact, especially in Ireland, it's quite a progressive tax system. But the other thing is, if it was a case of cutting services, what we believe is actually happening is that when resources go into more public spending, they go into salaries, be it nurses, guards, senior civil servants. So we would actually say restore services and cut salaries or pensions or whatever. So, you know, we actually think it's not a crude question of, you know, cut resources to help the rich. It's quite the contrary, you know.
What exactly?
It's frontline services in general in Ireland are cut first before the pay of public sector workers, be it nurses, guards, consultants, senior civil servants. And that's unfair. It's grossly unfair. But that is the Irish system. So far from, we're actually much more for better services and for more efficient services rather than cutting expenditure. And anyway, expenditure is not the solution often to better services. We have the highest proportionally the highest health spending, I think, in the OECD and certainly in Europe. I mean, and you can look at the quality of our health service in response. So often throwing more money into services like the health service creates more of a problem and not less, you know.
If you wanted to save some money that could then fund tax cuts, there's plenty of money, for example, there's many billions spent on farm subsidies. Some of that, for example, $500,000 a year is paid to Larry Goodman alone in farm subsidies. That has to come ultimately out of taxes. For example, and I'm sure Breed Smith of People Before Profit or anybody else on the left would say, we took on an enormous debt bailing out dead banks. Why does that come after reducing spending on public services in the queue?
Well, it shouldn't. I mean, we would argue that we've been tackled on this in terms of bank debt. We would argue that was wasted money. I mean, the banking system had to be rescued in some shape or form, but the blanket guarantee, the unwillingness to burn the bondholders, the acceptance of the EU directive not to do so, and the ECB directive was wrong. And in that, we would be in agreement with people on the left. And you're quite right, there's farm subsidies. There's lots of areas where large cuts can be made. One area which is never looked at is the overseas aid development aid budget, which is near enough to $700-800 million a year. And there's no political debate by left or right or any party around that. It's something that I certainly
have pushed myself about. This is the 0.7% level target for funding foreign aid. Ireland's an enormously wealthy country. We're in, if not in, then certainly very close to the top 10 most wealthy countries in the world. Do we really need to cut our taxes by cutting aid to places like Uganda?
Well, this is true, but we also had an economic crash and we were bankrupt for a number of years. We're still borrowing huge amounts of money. So we're borrowing money.
This is quite literally first world problems.
Yeah, but you give to Uganda, we'd have a major issue with giving to regimes which then spend, in the case of Uganda, $600 million on buying military aircraft in the year in 2013, 2014, I think.
Targeting that aid differently might be a good idea, but it's an entirely different
argument. I can tell you that in in the downsizing that took place by European countries during the European recession of the last few years, Ireland per capita gives more now than Germany or France, and that is or Britain indeed, and that is it's very laudable and it's very impressive that it wasn't cut, but it would be an area that we would certainly think should be at least suspended or maybe cut back temporarily. For cutbacks considerably, given what we're spending, it's true that you know it's not our job to save and development these countries. Especially emergency aid is one thing, and disaster relief, but this is not emergency aid. This is to pay for infrastructure and roads in countries where, you know, like Ethiopia and Mozambique, they're actually doing okay.
Isn't it ultimately, as part of the global community, in Ireland's enlightened self-interest to make sure that countries don't collapse into absolute poverty, which is very often associated with war and other civil disturbance?
Yeah, it is, but is that enough of a reason to spend hundreds of millions? We wouldn't think so. Of course, you know, one doesn't want to see the collapsing of countries or through war or famine or whatever means, but I mean, Syria is a country that was relatively quite prosperous, and look at the state of the Middle East now. You know, it's not a reason we would think to keep giving Irish taxpayers money to the other part of, to large parts of Africa, just to prevent it from going under. It wouldn't be a moral imperative. You know, it's one thing to help people to save from starvation or from abject poverty, but that's not a good enough reason in our opinion. Neither is it the reason that Eamon Gilmore gave when he was tarnished, that it gives good credit to Ireland as a country, and people will think well of us and maybe even invest here. That just seemed to be nonsense, actually.
Well, I don't know if it's nonsense, but don't you think that maybe you're falling into a trap that people who promote free market economics, perhaps for the best of reasons, come across as little short of heartless when they say, you know, to hell with building schools in desperately poor African countries, we can use that money to cut taxes?
Well, I don't know why it's one or the other. It shouldn't be. You can do both. I mean, and most of the free market...
Well, no, you advocated suspending that aid.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, yeah, why should Ireland have to do the heavy lifting? Why don't other countries do it? You know, like free people who are involved in aid or have been would argue that continuous, unlimited Western development aid to Africa has increased corruption, has reduced the entrepreneurial culture, has given a level of dependency that's actually sent Africa back. I mean, that's not just my argument, that's the argument of many, many critics. So, you know,
Let me suggest why we should do it, because Ireland, from the 1970s onwards, got huge amounts of European money, of essentially development aid, which brought Ireland from, and before the 1970s, Ireland was not a whole lot better than many African countries are now.
Well, that's not an exaggeration completely. No, it is.
Nevertheless, Ireland was an enormous beneficiary of transfers of aid, which built up the infrastructure.
Yeah, but that was a condition of membership of the European community. You know, not even the 70s, 1990s, actually. Albert Reynolds secured the Delors Plan and funding massive investments. But that's still ongoing in Eastern Europe. That's part of the EU. That's kind of part of a common economic and now security organisation. It's quite different to Ireland giving money to places that most Irish citizens could not be able to find on a map, like Malawi or Mozambique or wherever. I mean, you know, in all due respects, like, that was part of a European condition. But I do take your point entirely that Ireland has been a recipient, and it was a recipient of support after the famine when doors were open to go to Africa. So, but I think, I wouldn't argue at all that against just cutting the aid. I just think it needs to be looked at more stringently, and maybe in times of great economic stress that we've had here, we could maybe suspend it. But the broader thing is, you can help, you know, the developing world, and you can cut taxes at home. It's not one or the other, you know.
It's rare is the regime that has managed to do both successfully, but you do, and I was looking at your document that you have online. I'll put a link to it on the webpage for this podcast, but you list out some of the ways in which Ireland is essentially getting not very much for its buck in terms of public spending. Can you give me some of the examples that you think are most salient on that?
With the health Spending is the obvious one. I mean, it seems to be a situation where a kind of black hole of spending has been created in the early noughties, and it's got worse. And a lot of it has to do with the abolition of various health boards and the creation of the HSE as a body, which has too much bureaucracy, and more money seems to go into creating more bureaucracy as opposed to going to frontline services. We won't get bogged down in the health debate because there are many different aspects to it. You know, at the very top, the consultants.
Well, your graph that you have here is absolutely startling. Total health expenditure as a percentage of GDP, Ireland comes in very close to the top of the graph. The United States is off the scale, but Ireland's GDP is not necessarily a very good measure because of the amount of transferring of profits of people like Google and Facebook into Ireland. You also have Ireland's health expenditure as a percentage of GNP, and that's actually apparently, according to your graph, the highest in Europe. Higher than Denmark, Germany, Netherlands, France. Why are we getting such bad value?
Well, I think, as you say, many aspects. I'll just give you one straight off. It got absolutely no coverage during the election. It was a Sunday Business Post cover story 2 weeks ago that we're paying among the highest drug costs in Europe. And despite promises by this government, Leo Varadkar, the minister, that would be addressed, we're still paying through the nose to pharmaceuticals for prescription drugs in the health service and privately and so on. So this is a vast amount of public spending. There's also the issues of the unions. The Liam Doran, as a nurses' representative, may protest about the conditions, but in many ways his union contributes to it with the idea that in private hospitals, although a nurse can pull a bed or there can be one radiographer doing an X-ray, in public hospital has to be two radiographers, and the public hospitals have to employ orderlies to do so. So it creates another tier of workers and work practices. There's also the fact that the consultants are special interests, like the legal sector, which have been well protected in terms of what they can charge and how they can work. And it just seems there are many, many, many reasons for it. I don't know that it comes to a kind of perfect storm of poor spending and high spending, and maybe the creation of too many smaller hospitals rather than less hospitals, which are more efficient and have better resourced. It's certainly not something that's going to be tackled overnight, but it's one area where we have not getting any kind of bang for our buck, as you put it.
I hear what you're saying, and I think you're probably correct that there's a lot of very poor quality spending, that's to say money being spent and not very good value being got for it. But that seems to benefit, you mentioned hospital consultants, lawyers possibly as well. And they would also be the sort of people who would benefit enormously from the type of tax cuts, even if you don't personally approve of the Renew tax cut plan. It's clear that the tax cuts that you're advocating would be very favourable to people who are earning, you know, 100 to 200,000 euro a year. Can you understand that the people who are listening to that will think that what's going to happen if your suggestions were taken on board by politicians would be that the tax cuts would come through, but the reforms never would?
This is the... Which tax cuts study?
A flat tax, or even if you don't go as far as a flat tax, but had a big tax cuts for people on six-figure salaries, those people who are paying those taxes are also the people who are benefiting very ineffective public sector spending, lawyers, on hospital consultants. Isn't there a danger that if your advice was heeded, then there'd be a big danger that the tax cuts would come through and the reforms never would?
Well, absolutely. But remember, the tax cuts, we would see that as applying much more to people in the private sector. You see, we think the public sector has costed it.
Lawyers will tell you they work in the private sector.
But they're interest, you know, sector. Absolutely. No. See, we're for the free market. There's not insufficient competition around the legal sector. The legal reform bill was gutted. Now it's gone through, but with lots of amendments. So we're totally against cartels vested interests and monopolies as well, because we're for choice and for competition.
Sure, and, so, and a party that you might have supported, the Progressive Democrats, said something that sounded very similar, that they wanted to break up the cartels and to cut people's taxes. They were far more successful on the tax cutting than they were on breaking up cartels.
I know, yeah. I wondered why that was.
Well, perhaps it is because those people are very powerful, as we saw with the Legal Services Bill. It would appear the Law Society and the Bar Council had sight of the proposals for the legislative proposals before they even went to cabinet. They had better access than cabinet ministers.
I know, and that's depressing. And when they went to canvass, they wouldn't canvass individual TDs; they would go directly to ministers. But look at how much of the legal fraternity is in our political culture, former cabinet ministers, former attorney generals. Look, I don't begrudge, you know, them making you fight for your corner, but it is a vested interest. And this is the thing, as even since we formed the group, I've realised that we have as much energy focused on trying to break up or challenge vested interests and special interests as we have against what we thought would be just dealing with public sector reform and bringing down public sector pay and making more affordable and efficient. So, yeah, these are the battles to be fought.
But you can see somebody who's a nurse or whatever is saying that, hang on a second, you want to cut my pay in exchange for getting more efficient public services and getting the people who are going to get big tax cuts working properly. I wouldn't trust that if I were them.
Well, but why can't you do? Why can't you cut the nurses' pay if it needs to be cut, and then also the consultant? I mean, you know, like, let everybody pay.
Because the consultants have a doctor as the health minister and a direct line to cabinet, and people in more working class professions don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the health sector is, well, but if you look at other parts of the civil service, like senior civil servants took large cuts. I mean, I would rather the Lansdowne Road Croke Park agreements protected everyone in terms of jobs, but the lower paid civil servants did take cuts, but so did senior civil servants as well. So there's no kind of, the working class civil public sector worker wasn't necessarily the only one getting hit. The example of the health sector is probably a bit different, as you say, but it's about everybody taking a cut so that more money can go into services, you know. I mean, the rolling idea of tax cuts that we would support is just more philosophical. We haven't argued for any specific tax cuts. We would be much more vigilant about not putting up taxes anymore so as to pay for more public sector pay rises.
Would you accept, Eamon, that taxes in Ireland are disproportionately levied on economic activity and not levied at all on economic inactivity? So we have almost no property taxes, almost no wealth taxes, ironically opposed by those on the left, but a very modest property tax brought in.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's our VAT rates, for example, at 23% on any economic. If I go and get printing material done for the Hibernia Forum, I mean, that is really quite a punitive thing for the state to come in and take 23% of the transaction, you know, just to get something printed. I mean, that's economic activity. I entirely agree with you. I don't know if the wealth tax is the answer, because as I said to you before, the wealthy already pay, I just look at the statistics, a very high amount of tax, but there's no doubt that...
Yeah, but have a look at another statistic. Look at the ghost estates that were built as far afield outside Dublin as Leitrim and Longford and Cavan.
Yeah.
A large part of that reason that they were built was that sites close to Dublin that should have been developed were being sat on by people who were essentially billionaires, certainly in property terms, billionaires who knew that they should not, if they wanted to maintain their wealth, allow anything more than a drip of property onto the market.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to pay a cent in tax for squatting on those sites. They could force people into either hugely long commutes or paying huge amounts of money for their property, far more than in any other European country. Mm. And there is nothing to stop them from blocking the development on those sites essentially indefinitely. People who cheer for income tax cuts seem to be an awful lot quieter when it comes to having significant property taxes.
I'm not sure if there would be quieter if I'll give you an example. Like Carl Dieter, who's come to join our group, actually, he's proposed a number of times that there should be actually a tax or a levy on people squatting on land and not using it. And I think that might be a runner, actually, publicly. Like, that would be a, like, again, one is always wary about any kind of intrusions into the market, the property market. I'm not trying to say the market is God by any means, but or should be untrammeled. But in that case, you're quite right. There's a manipulation, a lack of provision. And I think that, you know, that might be something that would be welcomed by the populace. More welcome than a property tax on people who are actually in a small family home and just have to face another tax for which they told was a household charge, which would increase improve local services, when we all know that that's nonsense, that there's no local services that increase. It just goes into central extractor, you know. That seems unfair as a property tax.
Eamon, you're not running in this election. Any chance you will be in a future one?
Well, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, because this election is confirming my worst fears, or our worst fears, about the need for an appeasement of every kind of popularity or populism. And the thing with the Hibernia Forum is, when you're not running for election, you can say what are unpalatable things or frank things. I've got a piece going to the newspaper tomorrow, actually, about Enda Kenny's comment about whingers being, in some respects, correct. So, having said that, there's no point in watching from the sidelines. So maybe next election we will put someone up, because it certainly needs to be someone articulating our side of the debate. That's what we would feel.
Eamon Delaney, the director of the Hibernia Forum, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks very much.
If you like the Here's How podcast, please rate and review the show on iTunes and other podcast providers. Share it on Facebook and Twitter. Tell your friends. But most of all, make your views heard. Call us on 076-603-5060.
And that's almost the end of episode 31 of Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, published on the 23rd of February 2016. If you can think of a topic, whether it's about the election or not, or if you want to suggest someone to include, and that could be yourself, then let me know. If you like the podcast, please go on iTunes and give it a rating or even write a nice review. Also, please like the show on Facebook. Please follow @HeresHowPodcast on Twitter, and of course, subscribe to the show. You can use iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or any other podcast app or software. And you can do all of that or get in touch with the show right from www.hereshow.ie. Or you could just tell anyone who knocks on your door how great the podcast is. The best of luck to anyone whose name is on a ballot paper. The next show will be uploaded shortly. The Here's How podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.